Hey guys, you're listening to the Anti-Marketing Podcast. I am here with Jonathan as my co-host today.
Hello.
And we are talking to Andy Montero of Montero's Restaurant, Bar, and Catering in Elizabeth City, North Carolina.
Hello.
So Andy, I know far too much about your business. It's like a great thing, but I don't want to lead you too much. So tell me what you do that is not completely evident by the name of your business.
Well, my wife Karen and I own and operate a restaurant in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, old farmhouse. We're in our 16th year. And along with operating this restaurant, we do catering here in the Hampton Roads Market as well as Northeastern North Carolina. And we do work in school nutrition as well as senior nutrition now. So that has been part of our growth and development as a restaurant. But we've been very fortunate to have a good go at it for quite some time and have been really welcomed in this rural community that we found ourselves.
How'd that happen? How'd it start? Like, how did one day you say, let me just, like, open this restaurant in an old house in Elizabeth City, North Carolina?
Like all good stories, I followed a girl. Karen and I met at culinary school. We Johnson & Wales had a campus here in Norfolk way back when, which is where we met. And I courted her for a year and a half before we started dating. And I would travel home on occasion with her to visit her parents and honestly just fell in love with the community. I grew up in Great Bridge back when Great Bridge wasn't Hickory. Mm. Small, everybody kind of knew each other. Elizabeth City at that time had the exact same feel, and I just really enjoyed it. And when she and I were in our third year in culinary school, and instead of going to get a bachelor's degree, which sounded so boring, we decided let's get engaged, let's get married and open our own business, and let's do it in Elizabeth City. Because back in the day, 22 years ago, Chesapeake really wasn't as large as it is now, which is where I grew up, and very few independent restaurants. They were mostly just the chain restaurants that you found in the Greenbrier area, and we just really weren't looking to compete in this market or in Norfolk or Virginia Beach. Elizabeth City really just felt like home to us, and that's kind of how we landed there. The specific location itself was really, really dumb luck. I got into teaching when I first moved to Elizabeth City, and the house actually never went on the market. I had heard from my supervisor at Northeastern High School that this house was coming up. He's a realtor now, got out of education, and said, hey, I think this house would be great for a restaurant. You should go look at it. Here's the owner's information. And that's that.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's funny because I like think about it, and I know you've never been there, Jonathan, but it's like, every room is different. So, like, they've created, like, they've renovated over the years and done all these things, but you can see that it was a house. Like, it's clear that it was a house, but they still have, like, a big dining room, and they have an event space, and they have, their kitchen's massive.
Yeah.
And it's weird to me to think that you guys saw that house, and you were like, that could be a restaurant.
And it sounds like a bunch of BS, but honestly, like, when we walked in the front door, which nobody ever used prior and has never used since, their original front door of the house, we kind of saw it that day when we walked through. It's amazing. Granted, after we got started, we purchased the property and we got started, it took us 5 years to get the property to where we have it now. Mm. And so there were changes as it went, but like the main home, those small dining rooms that were bedrooms and living rooms and kitchen space, like those rooms we saw as they are now, that's what we saw 20 years ago.
It's so awesome because you'll like go in there and he'll be like, that was a living room.
Yeah.
That was a bathroom. That was where the kitchen was. And kitchen was like, the world can't see this, but it's like, was as small as this room. Like it was like tiny, right?
It was pretty small.
Yeah. Like a galley kitchen.
Yeah.
What I picture in my head.
A little bit bigger than a galley kitchen, but it was not a large room. And what's really neat is we still have guests come to this day and they say, I used to come to parties here, or I've been to birthday parties here, or these were like second cousins, and I remember when this happened in that room, and I remember what used to be here and how it used to look. And to the majority of my staff, actually to all of my staff outside of my wife, they're all like, oh, that's nice, because they never got to see it. They never got to walk in that space, but Karen and I have. And so to hear those stories and to literally be able to imagine what it was like because we saw that space. We walked through that house while they were still living there. That's just a really neat thing. It's a really neat connection to have with a customer, a client, outside of that experience of providing food for them. Like, it's really neat to be able to say, man, I remember the dark wood paneling that was in this room. I know where you're talking about and what it was like. So
you bought that house with the intent of it being a restaurant?
100%.
Gotcha.
Yes.
That's cool. And was the intent to have this, like, sort of as you're describing it, I'm thinking like this, like kind of eclectic, like really interesting experience, like different. Was that what you guys were going for versus like, hey, we're going to get this place in the strip mall up the street?
Well, we ran the gamut before we decided on this home, before it kind of fell into our laps. First place we looked at was a much, much, much smaller home. I mean, I'm talking, you know, 1,100 square feet. It would have had two dining rooms and a kitchen not much bigger than this space here. It would have been much, much smaller range, like seating of 30, 40 people. That didn't work out. We jumped from that to an old Shoney's, much larger. Not as large as what we have now, but it was an established space. Dining rooms were already set. It was kind of a move in, redecorate, and we could be up and running. That fell through. And actually, I came to work that morning, the day I found out if it had already been under contract. Upset, that's when I heard about the house.
Wow.
So, and again, we doubled the square footage once we got started. So we weren't necessarily, we didn't already have the blueprint in mind. Like, this is what we want to do, and we want to have two banquet space. We weren't even going to do a banquet space. As we started laying out the property and putting things in place, like, well, we still have all of this additional space. And you know what Elizabeth City's missing? Medium-sized, if you will, now it's considered small, but a medium-sized meeting room, banquet space. Well, we have the space. We can do that. Let's build it out. And then, what are we going to do in the backyard, which at the time was overlooking, you know, the city prison, the jail. It was like, oh.
Was it really?
Yeah. So they built a new one, but it's still there. So we're like, all right, well, we can build a dining room out here. We just won't put windows up. And so we built an additional space. And so we just kind of added onto it. It's another reason why it took 5 years. But we just, as things were going and as we realized, like, this is something that we could capture in this market that's not here right now. Let's do this. And then we ended up with what we have, which is, I would venture to say by seats, the largest restaurant in Elizabeth City, outside of, you know, our university or maybe the galley on the Coast Guard base. But and it's neat. I will say it's one of the only, if not the only, places in Elizabeth City where you walk in the front door and you don't see a single dining room. You don't see a single table. You literally have to be moved away from the lobby, away from the front door before you see other guests or a table, which is nice because a lot of times it can be uncomfortable on either side to walk in the front door and you either see everybody or you're being seen by everybody.
Yeah.
So it allows us to offer a little bit different environment, not just from what's available in Elizabeth City, but different environments from you can turn right and go to our bar area, which is our most popular dining room. That's where the hustle and bustle is. It feels like you're in a busy restaurant, or you can go up the steps to the original part of the house, and there's four small dining rooms, which are much more intimate.
That's my favorite
foot. Yeah. And everybody has their own favorite. Everyone does, and they request it, usually by room color. They'll say, I want to go, they'll go to the blue room, I'll go to the red room, or the fireplace room. And so it's really neat. So it offers a lot of different variety that you kind of become accustomed to once you've joined us once or twice. We've moved you in different parts of the restaurant. You go, I like it better here or over there, and we accommodate the best that we can.
Tell me, why, right? Like, when you think about the daunting task of opening a restaurant and being young and crazy and whatever, like, why put all your eggs in the basket of a restaurant in Elizabeth City?
Outside of stupidity?
I wasn't gonna say it.
I love the industry that I'm in. I've been working since I was 15 years old. Never worked outside of the restaurant or hospitality industry, the food industry. And I absolutely love it. So, it, you know, there's really no question of, you know, why do I want to do this? It just was the natural progression. I wanted to work in a restaurant, which I did as a food runner and a busboy when I was a teenager. And then I wanted to cook, and I started doing that. And then I wanted to manage, and I did that. And when I met someone that had the same interests as me that I fell in love with, it was like, well, the next thing is for us to own our own business, because we also wanted to have a family. Right. So it made sense that, okay, well, we, you know, again, you've mentioned this in your intro to this podcast. It's not that, oh, well, I'm going to have all of this free time because I own my own business, but I can, to some extent, dictate when I can take time off and how I want to go about scheduling myself. It, you know, the small town choice was 100% the right choice. We live in the neighborhood that my wife grew up in. Her parents are still in the same house two doors down. I can watch my kids walk or ride their bike down to their grandparents' house. We have family dinner together every Sunday. It was 100% the right choice. I would never do it differently. I have my children raised in a community like I was raised in, like my wife was raised in, to be raised in a community that we're 100% involved in and committed to. Like, that's what it's all, that's what small business is about. Not to say that it couldn't be done in a larger market like Hampton Roads, but for us, it was just a natural fit to be in Elizabeth City.
Tell me then, like, how, so we've established how much you loved Elizabeth City and how much Karen loved Elizabeth City. Tell me why you think, or how you got Elizabeth City to love you, Andy Montero, the dude from Graybridge.
Well, I think it's, one, presumptuous to assume that Elizabeth City loves Andy Montero or Montero's.
Well, I've met, like, a whole lot of people in Elizabeth City who definitely at least are regular patrons of Montero's.
We're fortunate we have a lot of those.
Yeah.
I can speak on my behalf, right? I was raised in a family with very philanthropical tendencies. My father is an immigrant from the Philippines. He started doing medical missions in Tangier Island when I was a young kid. And I remember going and sitting on Tangier Island while they were doing free clinics for migrant workers. He started the Chesapeake Care Free Clinic, which is still one of the leading free care clinics in the country. Physicians for Peace, and now Montero's Medical Missions. I mean, that's been my father's life work, is to give back. You know, and so growing up, and my mother in her right as well, she was a volunteer EMT for 15 plus years while raising us and running my dad's medical office. So, like, I watched my parents, like, that's just how we were raised, was you give back to the community. So being a business owner, I don't know, it was a natural tendency, is like, okay, well, this is our marketing tactic. Was we're going to just be involved. And there are some great companies in Elizabeth City who really are the blueprint for us, that are involved in everything, but in meaningful ways, not just throwing money somewhere to have their name on a sign. And we kind of followed their lead and then kind of created our own path as well as how we can get involved. And part of that, actually a really big part of that, was just being involved in the schools. You know, when we started to have our family and we decided, you know, we wanted to be involved in all aspects of it. And our oldest was in kindergarten, public school. And we were just like, you know what? This is really important. As business owners, we're hiring the products of our public schools. You know, these students, whether they get hired by us or not, they're going to get hired by somebody who is going to provide a service for us at some point in time. We want to invest in them. And I think that that was kind of our gateway into really showing the community, like, we're invested. We're not just here as a, you know, to provide a service or to make money. Like, we're going to be here. We're your neighbor. We want to be your neighbor, and we want you to be ours. And that's the only way that, you know, our community can grow. And it's been we're very fortunate to say it's been a good thing for us. That hopefully is our legacy. Not that, oh, we had this chicken dish that was everyone's favorite, but in 20 years from now, I want. But I want somebody to say, I remember that restaurant because I won the spelling bee in fifth grade, and, you know, they donated dinner or whatever, or there was a tragedy in my family, and you know, we were brought food from them that they sent, or anything like that. Like, there's so much more to for us, there's so much more to our business than just food.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I've always appreciated about Monteros, and like, again, like I know more because I do, but you take care of the people around you. So it's not just about, hey, like, can we, you know, make a great meal and give our guests a great experience, and like, that's a big part of it, clearly, but things like family meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Explain what family meal is.
If you've worked in the industry, especially nowadays, it's becoming more and more common. You know, family meal for us is an opportunity for someone in the kitchen to kind of flex their culinary muscles if they choose to. We provide dinner. And when we were open for lunch and dinner, we provided lunch and dinner. So anybody that was working. Essentially, the way it works is you get assigned, the cooks get assigned different days. We rotate it around. It costs everybody $2, with the exception of like there are dishwashers and the person who's cooking it. You get to eat as much as you want, and all the money goes to the cook who prepared it. So, and you know, I'm a cook at heart. My wife is front of house by heart, and so I know cooks never get tipped. They never get tipped out. They don't make cash like servers do at the end mm-hmm. of the night. So this was a way, you know, each week, at least one night of the week, you walked out with a couple bucks in your pocket. And we sit down, definitely all over the front of the house, we all sit down together and we eat, and we go over what the dinner specials are going to be for the night, what special events we have coming up, service issues, service compliments. More and more here recently in the last year and a half, our cooks are taking the time to come out and eat with us. But again, if you're in the industry or have been in it, you know, a lot of times they're standing at their station, getting mm-hmm. what they can in before the influx of service begins. But it's just a really good opportunity for us to break bread together. You know, it's hard if you're going to be serving somebody else food and you're going to be giving them not just that nourishment, but that opportunity to have camaraderie at the table and mm-hmm. share special events. It's really hard to do that but not be given the same gratitude by the people that you work with. Mm. You know, so we implemented that early on. It has changed over the years, I think, much for the better. But it is something that we've always done. They don't let me make family meal anymore because I was always the one who was taking all the leftovers and trying to put something together. My family meals were never a hit. In fact,
cheese,
they would,
Andy.
Yeah, they would tell you some of the worst ever were prepared by me. So I leave it to the professionals now.
It's awesome because I feel like you guys have taken this idea and said, you know what, hey, we're going to do this for us because obviously this is our dream. But, like, we're going to include literally everyone around us.
It's just, I don't know, for me, it's our philosophy. That's how it should be. I say it a lot, actually. Like, this is what a small business in a small community is supposed to do. Mm. It's what a small business in a large community is supposed to do. You know, how am I supposed to convince you that you should spend your dollars with me if I'm not willing to convince you that I have more of an interest in you than your dollar?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
It is, and I think a big part of what you do and you guys. You knew I was going to ask this question, but it started with muffins.
It did.
It did start with muffins. Tell me about the muffins.
I didn't have a job. I walked into our Chamber of Commerce one day to introduce myself because I thought I'll start doing some in-home catering. It was what I was doing here. Hampton Roads before I moved down to Elizabeth City. As I'm introducing myself, somebody comes running out of the back and she's like, oh, you're a chef. And I'm like, well, we're going to open a restaurant here eventually. She said, well, I'm getting ready to open up Elizabeth City's first coffee shop. And I need somebody to do some baking for me. I lied straight to her face and said, yep, I can bake. I can do that. And she said, great. So we exchanged information. And about 2-3 months later, she opened up Muddy Waters Coffee Shop, which is still there. They just celebrated their 21st anniversary. And so I started baking like Texas-sized muffins and croissants and filled danishes and stuff for her. And first 2-3 months went great. And then as business plateaued, as it always does, I showed up one day and she said, hey, we didn't sell everything yesterday, so I still have a bunch. I only need this much. I'm like, okay, no problem. Gave her what she needed. And then I sat there drinking my coffee and was like, what am I going to do with all this leftover stuff? So I took it to the only other business that I was familiar with in town, which was two blocks over. It was my car insurance company. And I went over and walked in and said, hey. Like, I literally walked in with a hotel pan, a steam table pan, like nothing fancy. I'm like, hey, I have all this stuff left. I don't know what to do with it. Do you guys want it? And somebody, I wish I could remember who it was, somebody said, well, if you sold these every day, I would buy them. A light bulb went off. And so that afternoon when I was baking, I baked extra on purpose. I went back to State Farm, sold them something, went down the street to Coastal Office Equipment, and I gave them product and said, I'll be back next Tuesday. And then I just started hitting businesses, and my first stop was always free and said, I'll be back on this day. I created a schedule, and I was selling, gosh, 150, 200 Texas-sized muffins a day.
You're like a muffin drug dealer.
Yeah, I was.
Exactly what it is.
I used to tell the story like it was the best job ever because I'd walk in, I'd put them in baskets, like picnic baskets and stuff, and I'd walk in and I knew who was there and what they wanted. So I tried to always have their product, and it was great because they were always ready. They had money. They were happy to see me. I would walk in and it was like instant gratification for them and for me. Like to see that immediate, like, oh, they've been waiting all morning for you. Or to get a phone call, like, where are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, whatever happened, I didn't make it today. But it was great. And it was funny because I would introduce myself, who I was, what I was doing, what my future plans were. Mm-hmm. And that went on for 4 years.
Creating advocates the whole
time. Yeah, but like, oh, no, really, we are going to open a restaurant. I promise. We are. I promise we're going to open a restaurant. It went on and on and on and on. And while doing that, I also worked odd jobs. I commuted up here and taught at Johnson & Wales for 4 years and worked in a couple of our local restaurants. So as a tip of the hat to the support that the community gave us, so my wife and I could support ourselves, we put muffins in our bread baskets. And so to this day, you're still going to find muffins and yeast rolls and pumpernickel bread in our bread baskets. And it's great because it's never fails. Still, we get people say, I remember when you used to come to Dr. Whoever's office or this law office or to the hospital or to the courthouse. We used to just love that. And that's how I met you. And that's how we learned about you. And it's just awesome that, you know, 16, 17, 18 years later, people still remember us for that and acknowledge that, you know, we worked our butts off to, you know, to kind of get our name out there. And you know, we're extremely fortunate for it.
One of the things that you said a couple of times, and I'm always, you know, with this being the anti-marketing podcast, you always hear people that are like, this is, you know, get your business plan and go out there. And it's like all these, like Misty always says, like three steps to success and all of that. And
the worst.
You know, you have like, hey, we bought this house with this plan, and then 5 years. Or I'm just trying to make ends meet, and I'm making muffins. But then I hear the market say like, hey, give me this thing. And not to make everything about COVID, but you're in the restaurant industry. I think it's a great way to like see like all of your business principles like really, really tested. Like as you went through the last 18 months or so, like what was your philosophy? You know, because you've been in business forever, you're clearly resilient, but like what was your outlook? Like what was going through your head? How did you guys navigate it?
I think our very first thing was we have to take care of our people. Mm. It wasn't so much about business. How do we build more business? How do we change our business? Our very first concern was how do we keep our employees afloat? How do we make sure that they're doing okay? Mm-hmm. You know, we've said from day one, and we're firm believers, like that they make the magic happen. They do the work. Our job is to be there to support them, give them what they need to be successful. That was our very first thing. In fact, to harp back to the family meal thing, one of the first things we did was we did family meal for the community. So anybody that worked in the restaurant industry, because we were rocked so hard, we set up days where you come get free food. We did soups. We did like boxed meals. Mm-hmm. We started off by saying you need to bring a check stub, and then after like the first go around, we were like, screw this. If you need food, just come. Mm-hmm. That was our main focus, making sure our employees we're taking care of. Give them as many hours as we can. And, you know, as fortune would have it, we had the opportunity brought to us to get into senior nutrition, commonly known as Meals on Wheels, within 3 weeks of the shutdown of quarantine. They said, hey, we need help. We had been doing work with them, you know, special events. And they came to us and said, hey, we need help preparing this many meals every day. Can you do it? And for us, again, it wasn't necessarily we can make money on this. It's like, oh my gosh, this allows us to bring back all of our kitchen staff and half of our front of the house staff, and we can put them back to work. And we were very, very fortunate that all of our people were excited to come back to work. They missed each other. You know, they missed having something to do. And so we jumped right on that. And then that got us through to the point where we could open up to do just to-go's, which also got us through to when we can open back up at 50%. And, you know, so we were fortunate that we didn't find ourselves in a position where we had to reinvent ourselves necessarily. We were able to kind of stick to our guns and what really we felt was most important to us. And then opportunities arose that allowed us to just build upon that. And now, having survived through that, now we're going back and we're reevaluating our business strategies and saying, okay, what is most important to us? Senior nutrition is incredible. It's such a fantastic program for our community. And we're able to commit a lot of our resources to that, and we want to. So we've reevaluated, we've changed around what we're doing. It's down to the point of, like, our dining room space is different because I need my largest banquet space to be able to house a lot of the things that we're doing on a daily basis for senior nutrition.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, for us, it kind of worked backwards. You know, we didn't have to change things. We kind of stuck to our guns and said, we're going to weather this storm because we want to do this. And then the opportunities filled in.
One of the things that I really enjoy about that story, I'm choosing my words carefully. So, fun fact for anyone. They're both my clients. Jonathan and Andy, both my clients. So I know how you both reacted at the beginning of the pandemic. And I hope it's okay that I say this. Both of your reactions were not about yourselves. And I think it's how people pivot and can say, like, yeah, this sucks for me, but this has to suck for somebody else. I don't know. I don't believe in, like, karma or, like, any of those, like, whatever. But you get into the world, like, you get back from the world what you put into it. And so I think it's really special to say, like, hey, I had that phone call with you. Like, I distinctly remember you being like, man, I'm not worried about the dining room. We'll figure that out. Like, that's just, we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
I'm worried about, like, are people being fed? Can I pay my employees? Can they pay their rent? They shouldn't have to choose between rent and food. And that was, like, a real conversation that happened. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people forgot over the pandemic. Everything became so, well, what's going to happen to me? And that, I know, at least for me, and you both know this, but I think I made it, like, my personal mission to save everybody's business. It was super fun. and I say that very sarcastically, because it was not. But it was very similar. It was like, how can I help? What can I do?
Yeah.
Let me be on call at every given moment and help whomever and whatever I can, because you just don't know.
And I will say, you were great about that. I remember getting lots of texts or calls from you, and you sounded incredibly... You sounded way more concerned about my business than I did. And I don't mean to say that I wasn't concerned, but it was heartwarming to know that you had our back no matter what. You wanted to know, what can I do? What needs to change?
But but conversely, like, that's, I think, how... I think there's a lot... I think for everything negative that anybody said about people's reactions to the pandemic and small businesses and whatever, there are three people in this room who were immediately concerned about other people. Before themselves. It wasn't about where we were at. It was about where everybody else was at.
Yeah.
So if something happened to my business, I mean, would it suck? Yeah. Would I be fine? Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody else is that lucky.
Right.
And so I've always thought that was very cool of you, because even during all of that, the things that you said and the message that you put out there was never like, give us money, come buy things. It was, hey, this is a thing that we're doing. It's really important to us. Like, come get food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want anything for it. Just come get food.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't know Elizabeth City, I've gotten to know it pretty well over the last few years. There's a clear divide in, like, classes and where people are.
Yep.
And having a place like Montero's, I imagine, for a lot of people in that capacity probably made a really big difference in that time frame.
I would hope so.
I would be willing to put money on it. And so I think that's cool. I think a lot of times we get wrapped up in ourselves, and one thing that I've always really appreciated about you is that it's never necessarily been about you. Like, you understand that the people want to see you and hear from you, but you also understand that, like, it's not about that.
It's not.
No. You don't want the world to see you all the time.
No, I don't.
Like, can you get the dude in the dish pit? He'll say that to Mike. He'll be like, did you get the guy in the dish pit? Because that's...
It's the guy who's making it work. He's got the hardest job in the restaurant.
Yeah. And so, like, the pictures that I post for them.
I'm a much better person in service to others than I am in service to myself.
And that's cool.
And that is something I've been trying to remember, and I remind myself often. Like, my purpose is to serve others. Not just food, which I really enjoy doing. I like that instant gratification of being able to serve a meal. Like, literally, I don't do the cooking. Half the time I don't do the serving, but to walk up to a table and see somebody enjoying it makes me super happy. But to serve to the benefit of somebody else, like, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So
it's special. And I think as, you know, this is, like you said, an anti-marketing podcast and an entrepreneurship podcast and all those things. I think as entrepreneurs, if, like, that's who we're talking to, we have to step outside of ourselves sometimes and realize that when it's not about us, we can then be better for everyone, which then makes things better for us too. Mm-hmm, we get so caught up in whatever our vision is and whatever we think we want and whatever we think is right that we lose sight of, like, the forest and the trees and the whole, mm-hmm, you know.
Yep.
Phrases that are cliches that are out there. So, I always love that about you guys.
Thank you.
Do you think you're successful?
I think that we have reached levels of success beyond our dreams, but we're also really grounded. Our vision of success has completely changed. Our success used to be about growth. It used to be how much we're doing in sales, not so much profit, but, you know, are we growing? What else can we be doing? How can we hire more people? What market can we get into? And now it is, success for us is, are our employees happy? Are we happy? Are we spending enough time on ourselves as individuals, as a married couple, as parents? Mm-hmm. And are our employees doing the same for themselves, mm-hmm, and their families? And so I would say that while I will boastfully say, yes, I think that we have been successful, but it doesn't mean that we're resting on our laurels. Like, we have other goals. We want to see life and work become easier for everybody, not just ourselves. We're not pawning our work off on others, mm-hmm, so that we can take it easy. It's just like, okay, well, again, like, now we're looking at our business strategies and saying, what can we do differently with these new opportunities so that we can maintain what we're doing, even continue to grow, but without putting such a strain on ourselves and our employees. And that's the success now that we are reaching for. And again, we're finding successes on a weekly basis, like, okay, that worked, let's do that. And at the same time, we're acknowledging where we are coming short on that. Sometimes we're realizing that on our own. Sometimes it's our employees breaking down, where we go, okay, let's re-examine this. But again, we've built that trust with them that they can come to us or trust that if we acknowledge it or we recognize it, that they can give us time and we'll try to get it fixed. So those are the new levels of success that we're trying to reach as a business, as business partners, as a married couple, as parents. And so, you know, there's always work to be done. I mean, that's the beautiful thing. You know, if you enjoy work and you can find something to work towards, then, you know, you'll never be bored.
No, everything falls into place.
Yeah, yep.
If you could give any business owner a piece of advice, if you could talk to Andy giving out muffins 20 plus years ago, what would you tell a young Andy Montero? One piece of advice.
Probably you as an individual are not as important as you think you are.
Stop. Jonathan literally told me that at lunch. I'll say it on the podcast. Really? It's totally fine. That's literally our lunch conversation. I will call myself out. I am not afraid. Yeah, that was literally our lunch conversation.
I think the biggest failures in my life have been because I got too big for my britches. I thought I was more important than I was, that I was smarter, bigger, whatever. Always. It goes into what I said earlier. You know, I'm better in service to others than I am to myself. Because when I'm only in it to serve myself, I fail. Fall flat on my face. I am not as important as I think I am. And my wife has been fantastic from day one of putting up with me, but also helping me work through that. You know, and if you talk to employees from 16 and a half years ago, and which I have some still working at the restaurant, they'll tell you, I was a completely different person back then. Like, it has been a long road for me as an individual in every aspect of my life. That's the advice that I would give to myself. And I'm still learning, and it's a beautiful thing. But boy, you know, to hear it from a future self. That's so funny that you guys are having that same conversation.
Literally,
because
hilarious.
Yeah.
You were trying so hard not to say it, too. I'm like, no, that's definitely what Jonathan just said to me like a solid hour ago.
I was like, it's your podcast. So.
Yeah. And right, so you obviously you think the same way.
Very much so.
Like, you've learned, and I'm assuming that's something that you've had to learn through the process of building your own business, is that
it gets hard because you attach being the leader with having the vision to driving the organization. And it's very tempting to think you're special.
Yeah.
And then when you were talking about, like, the dishwasher, like, I feel the exact same way. I'm like, of everyone at our entire organization, from a day-to-day standpoint, I'm the least important.
Yeah.
That if I call out sick, nobody knows. But, you know, if my front desk or the lady that does our checks every day, if she calls out sick, like, everyone notices we have a problem. And so for me to come through and act like I'm special, not really, not that special. And then from an organizational standpoint, which is what we were talking about, like, if you build an organization so that you're special, like, you don't have much of an organization. You can't really do anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's beautiful about, you didn't use these words, but I could feel them, that, like, I feel like the best organizations are love motivated. And you can tell that you love the people you work with and that you love your community. And one of the things we talk about, like, anti-marketing, like, you meet all these guys that are coaches and gurus and they've got, you know, the new Instagram channel and all this stuff, and you can tell they don't love anyone. And there's no shortcut to it. You know, it took you years of handing out muffins, but the day you guys opened that restaurant, a bunch of people that loved you walked in. And there aren't like three steps to that. Like, not that anybody wants to buy. And right. I think that if people listen to this podcast that are starting businesses and they realize, like, hey, there's no rush. Like, there's no quick way to get anywhere worth going. And to hear, because we've both been in business about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Both of us ended up in the same place. We're like, I'm definitely not the special guy here. I'm just a part of it. And I feel the same way. It's like my job to get everybody else into their dream job. That's what I say all the time. Like, I want to build an organization where everybody else has their dream job, and then I don't want anyone to know me ever. Like, that's all I ever want. And so to hear that echoed from someone in a different industry, in a different part of town, like, that makes me feel good. So, like, okay, we're on the right track.
you two were chosen like together on purpose. This was a very intentional pairing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This was a very intentional pairing.
Don't strain your shoulder, pat yourself on the back.
Well done, Missy. We get it. You're so smart.
It's not about me. I'm not special.
We get it. Misty specifically put this together.
Stop. Yes. Stop.
Now it's all on the table.
No, I just, it's funny. It's funny because I think we similarly surround ourselves with people who think like we do or compliment each other. You said that. I can't take credit for that. And, you know, but as we do this podcast and the more people we meet, I am finding that maybe that's just the mark of a successful entrepreneur to say, like, I'm not doing things the way everybody else told me. It didn't just fall in my lap. I owned the building for 5 years and waited till the right time or whatever it is. Right. The people who took that time to realize there wasn't a playbook to make it perfect, because there is no perfect, those are the ones who you talk to that have a restaurant however many years later, or a real estate brokerage however many years later, or whatever it is. And, you know, in this land of quick fixes and in this of instant gratification, and we just want it now, if we all learn to take like two steps back, see beyond ourselves and like whatever, then we would know, just let it happen the way it's supposed to. Don't not put effort into it. Make muffins for strangers. Mm-hmm. You know, like, but things happen the way they're supposed to. And so it's how you pivot, it's how you adjust, and it's how you involve yourself with the people around you and care and love and serve the people around you that make you successful. Mm-hmm. And nobody can tell you how to do that because everybody does it differently.
Yep.
So that's super fantastic. I don't think I have anything else that I can say that is of value, because that was beautiful.
Me neither.
Yeah, I feel...
Well, I have like another 2 hours worth of discussions. Listen, yeah, but you told me we're closing in on our
time. I mean, I got time, but I don't know that I had time like that.
You gotta bring muffins next.
That's right.
I'm saying, you showed up without muffins, I might get hungry for the next 2 hours. Well, thank you for coming to hang out with us today.
I greatly appreciate the invite. Thank you both very much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.